From WXXI News, I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Connections. Our connection was made yesterday on the front page of the New York Times, and by now you might have seen the story. The New York Times reporting the story of a student at Hobart and William Smith Colleges named Anna. And Anna telling the story of her reported sexual assault claims and rape claims, now telling the New York Times she wishes she never came forward because of what happened after that. The story, in a shortened and condensed version, is that Anna, several weeks into her college experience at William Smith College, says that she was sexually assaulted, raped, and there is physical evidence that bears out that certainly something happened to her. She went through a process of a hearing. Students involved had lied to police in their first reporting to police, then came back and later claimed that they wanted to amend their story and tell the truth. There were questions at the panel hearing whether those panelists even considered the initial lies and whether they were considering the full physical evidence. But nonetheless, the claims of sexual assault were dismissed on the students. And then Anna says this: the colleges put her name out there publicly, and she said it made it very, very difficult for her. And it's been a process of Anna leaving school, and now she says she's coming back, but says the process of reporting and feeling like there is justice, she wants that to change. Well, she's not alone. Since yesterday, since the reporting of that story in the New York Times, there is a coalition of concerned students at Hobart and William Smith that is growing. In fact, it looks to me like the number of students doubled overnight. They have a list of what they'd like to see changed at Hobart and William Smith with the way the colleges handle sexual assault claims. We're going to get to their suggestions for the administration coming up. But first, we want to welcome our guests for the hour. In studio, we have Mary Jo Marino, who is the Restore Program Manager at Planned Parenthood here in Rochester. Mary Jo, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Brief description on what you do.
Sure. So Restore Sexual Assault Services is a program of Planned Parenthood. It's a free confidential service that's available to anyone that has ever been affected by a sexual assault, regardless of when it may have taken place. Services are available on a 24-hour basis through our hotline. And people that have been sexually assaulted or their loved ones can call us and ask for some guidance, for some support, and we can really offer some information and options that are available so people can make decisions that they feel comfortable with.
You are more than familiar with the challenge in reporting the fears and concerns people have, mostly women, have in coming forward, and the importance of handling those claims appropriately. Fair to say?
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to be talking about that this hour. Also on the line with us is Sarah Feldman. She's going to be a senior at Hobart and William Smith College, I should say it, at William Smith College in Geneva. And she is part of the coalition of concerned students there. Sarah, thank you for taking the time to join us.
Thank you very much for having me.
I should also say that we have invited Hobart and William Smith College's administration or anyone representing the colleges to join us this hour. They have declined and they have referred us to a statement on their website. And on their website, they indicated their disappointment in the New York Times for the story. They said that the reporter ignored a lot of the information they provided, and they feel that the New York Times reporter, I should tell you the reporter's name, is Walt Bogdanich. Walt is the head of the investigations desk there and is certainly not a green reporter, but the Hobart and William Smith College says that he missed a lot of things, he ignored a lot of what they shared with him, and that a lot of his reporting was, in their words, out of context. And so here is some of the statement from Hobart and William Smith Colleges. They say, quote, "We are not reluctant to enforce our community standards and take action when warranted. In the past 2 years, the colleges have adjudicated 7 sexual misconduct cases, resulting in 4 students being permanently separated from the colleges. The colleges are fortunate to work in cooperation with the police force in Geneva. We encourage every student who reports sexual misconduct to speak with the Geneva Police Department. In the case in question, within 1 hour of the report being made to Hobart and William Smith, the matter was presented to the Geneva Police Department." So there, that's just a small piece of it. And as we go throughout this hour, I will revisit the statement from Hobart and William Smith Colleges, because my desire was to have someone from the colleges join us live on the program, not to talk about the case about Anna specifically, but to talk about the way they handle these cases. They declined, so we'll continue to refer to their statement. I should also tell you that this case is getting national attention. Kirsten Gillibrand, senator from New York, wrote on Twitter yesterday, The story was an infuriating must-read about the epidemic of campus sexual assault. She said it was a brave survivor story that shows the need for real reform and how our colleges and universities handle sexual assault cases. She says one is too many. Howard Dean, a former presidential candidate, former Democratic National Party chair, said, after reading the New York Times story about rape at Hobart and William Smith, I wouldn't send my daughter there. What a disgrace. Now, again, these are opinions of some very powerful people, but Hobart and William Smith is saying they've got it wrong, that this is a school that handles these complaints with some regularity, and they handle it very, very seriously. They take it very seriously, and they don't dismiss that. They just say that there's a lot that's been misreported in this case. So let me start with Sarah Feldman, a student at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. What has been the reaction among you and your classmates to this story, Sarah?
It's been very upsetting because, for the most part, I would say, everyone is extremely proud to consider themselves a Hobart and William Smith student. And I would say that, for the most part, does not reflect our opinion of the administration in 9 times out of 10. And that's why it's been very hard throughout this process and seeing kind of what's been happening and how long it has taken for the administration to take into account the students' perspectives. I will say, in terms of the article, I think the out-of-context piece that they're referring to is that since this initial report in January, the school has done a lot more to change the policies and work with students more. So I worry that the New York Times article didn't mention those reforms that have been happening, but I would agree that the reforms haven't been happening as fast enough or as large reforms as the students would like, which is why the coalition was created, so that we can really, give students a voice, because all of these policies directly affect the students, and for students not to be included in the creation of these policies is just absurd.
And so let's talk about some of the reforms that the Coalition of Concerned Students that includes. Do you know how many, Sarah? The numbers I saw looked like it was rising quickly today. I have no idea how many are currently involved with the coalition.
I'm not sure of how many are. We have a Facebook group. There's a committee of about 30 of us that are kind of organizing the coalition. And then as of now, we have about 1,500 signatures on the petition. And we created I think the petition went live. It's maybe been 12 hours, nearly 24 hours since the petition has gone live.
Okay, and so let me read from some of that petition. And some of the changes that this coalition is asking for. First one, make the methods and practices involved in the handling of sexual assault cases available to the entire student body in print and online, not just by request. These resources must include, but are not limited to, the content of trainings for those involved in the reporting process. Sarah, why is that an important piece for you?
That's a very important piece because we want to feel, I think transparency is a huge issue, and we want to feel that the people that are selected to be judging these panels when a sexual assault case has come forward, we want to know that the people in these positions that are making these very serious decisions are properly trained, have know enough information, not only about sexual policies, but also kind of information about being able to sense victims and survivors and work with those people. We want to be able to know that the people that they're putting in front of us to make these decisions are responsible ones, and that they thoroughly know what they're doing.
Late last night, I had a chance to speak by phone to Inga Parsons, who is the attorney for Anna, the student that was described in that New York Times story yesterday. And Inga Parsons told me that they view the training as an important part of many important pieces here, but they had issues with so many different aspects of this. They also had some problems what they view as Hobart and William Smith, in Inga Parsons' words, hiding behind privacy so they don't have to address what happened. I should stress, Hobart and William Smith says because of privacy concerns, they can't discuss a lot of the details of Anna's case, even though Anna is putting herself out there publicly with her face, with her first name. And so Inga Parsons said that Anna had said all she wanted to say to the New York Times, but she did ask me to get in touch with the Coalition of Concerned Students. And so they are aware, Anna is aware of this coalition and some of these requests. And as we go down that list, let me ask Mary Jo, the issue of transparency when it comes to credentials and training of people who are reviewing these. What does that say to you?
I think it's hugely important. This is a topic that oftentimes gets swept under the rug, and it's not until something comes up, like Anna's story, that people are sort of scurrying to figure out what do we do. So I think education is hugely important to making sure that people that are in a position where they might be handling a disclosure are trained so that they understand both policies and procedures that are in place in their institution, as well as know where that person that's disclosing to them is coming from and why they may be behaving the way that they're behaving.
Mary Jo, it would be unfair for me to ask you to offer a full evaluation of the way one school, Hobart and William Smith, handles these. From what you read in the New York Times story, were you concerned with the way they create this panel?
I think on a larger scale, I was more concerned that, you know, this isn't just a topic that comes up on a college campus. This is something that comes up within our community far too often. And so I think this is really an opportunity to step forward, have a voice, just like the Student Coalition has done, and really try to nail out what do we do when this happens so that when something does come up, we're not caught by surprise.
Sarah, let me ask you, and again, we're not going to get too specific in Anna's case, but the bigger details that stood out when it comes to the panel that the New York Times reported are that the panel failed to consider the fact that the two male students involved lied to police, and that's on record. The panel did, apparently the panel did not consider that. The panel apparently did not wait for some of the physical evidence to come back that indicated that there certainly was some trauma and signs of assault or that kind of behavior, and that there were even at least one panelist confused about what a rape kit is and some of the terminology. So when you read those details in the story, we would love to hear from Hobart and William Smith to get more detail from them and more of what they're defending. They're, in broad terms, defending this panel and the work of the panel without specifically addressing the New York Times reporting line by line. Did those details convince you that the training and the creation of these panels is not working?
It did not convince me. I think that, again, the general consensus by myself and by my peers is that if people are making kind of these assessments and decisions that could potentially, you know, determine student safety or feelings of safety and feelings of the school, that we want to make sure that the best possible people are making those decisions. And those people exist at HWS. They're there, and we know that we have the capability to have that. And I think that's what's frustrating the students, is that it doesn't, at this point, it doesn't seem that the school has put that forward. Like I said, I will say that they have been making improvements with that, but it's unfortunate that it took a case like this or so many students protesting in order to get that change. But it is happening.
When it comes to the people involved, one of the suggestions from the coalition, I'll read straight from the coalition's petition, conduct a nationwide search for a new qualified Title IX coordinator. Many students feel that the current Title IX coordinator does not have the necessary skills to assist survivors and that she has engaged in victim blaming and other demeaning behavior. Our community needs an advocate for survivors in the administration. I can't speak for the administration. I think they would say that there is no one engaging in victim blaming. Why are you concerned about victim blaming, Sarah?
Victim blaming is a serious issue. I think it's a huge cultural issue as well, where unfortunately you hear a student, you know, say she was raped or she was sexually assaulted. And unfortunately students are like, oh, she was probably just really drunk. Or are you sure it was rape? It's blaming the victim and putting them in a position of weakness, which is not the case. That's why we like to use the term survivor instead of victim. I think in this case, it's the person that they were talking about was elected to this position from another department in the school. And I think it was kind of the sense is that it was done in a quick fix so that we would have a Title IX coordinator. And the school is very much aware and has agreed with us that the person in this position has not done a fair job. So they are conducting, they should be, I know they're conducting a search for a new person, but we believe that it should extend outside of HWS as well.
Let me ask Mary Jo Marino on those lines. You hear Sarah talk about the victim blaming that comes when you hear people say, well, that's what you get for being drunk, or that's what you get for wearing clothes that look like that. Let me read a comment from the New York Times website along these lines. Quote, how can anyone not think the drinking was the key here? Maybe don't get so blitzed out of your mind that you can't remember anything. Maybe a lot of bad things happen when people are drunk out of their mind. No, that's not an excuse to get raped, but since almost every frat house rape story seems to involve heavy drinking, maybe you want to think about that before you go in. Mary Jo, does that sound like victim blaming to you?
That absolutely sounds like victim blaming. This is a topic that's uncomfortable for a lot of people, and we need to get comfortable with what's not comfortable for folks. And so I think victim blaming is a huge societal issue that we're facing, and it is probably one of the main reasons why people don't come forward.
Let's ask Sarah, you heard that same comment there. Does that sound like what you're talking about? The maybe don't get so blitz out of your mind. Does that sound like victim blaming to you?
It is absolutely victim blaming, and it's 100%, a reality that students face.
We're talking to Sarah Feldman from Hobart and William Smith. She's going to be a senior next year, and she's representing, for this hour, the Coalition of Concerned Students. In studio is Mary Jo Marino, the Restore Program Manager at Planned Parenthood. We invited Hobart and William Smith to join the conversation live with us this hour. They referred us to their website and their statement, which includes a number of points that they say the New York Times either left missing or were downplayed in the story. We've linked to those statements, that full statement and those points made by Hobart and William Smith on WXXINews.org. We invite you to read their full response. It's a long one. Hobart and William Smith says, again, that they pay great attention to this detail. We're going to continue to go down this list of suggestions from the Coalition of Concerned Students. I want to bring in someone else on the phone. This is Kelsey Carroll. She is a graduate now of Hobart and William Smith, and she also founded the Hobart and William Smith Sexism Project. Kelsey, thanks for taking the time to call in.
Hi, thanks for having me.
From your perspective, when you see some of the way that the colleges have responded to this case, they feel that the New York Times did a poor job yesterday and that they handled this appropriately. Are you confident that your alma mater did that?
I think that they handled it in the best way possible. I think that I think it was smart to sort of let things settle before responding to every single one. But sorry, what was the first part of your?
Well, I mean, when you read the story, do you feel that the colleges are handling rape and sexual assault claims appropriately? Are you satisfied that that is happening?
So I think was mentioning this, but the colleges, they definitely, within the past year, I've mentioned to some of my other friends who have also graduated, that the amount of changes that have happened since I was a first year 4 years ago, and I do think perhaps it was a little bit late in the game, but that regardless, they are taking steps and they are making changes, and I think that we can see that with there has been called the Sexual Task Force that was formed by both concerned professors and concerned students who have come together with similar comments to the ones that Sarah and her group have been saying, looking for a qualified Title IX coordinator and hoping to have a little bit more transparency within the process of filing a report complaint.
And Kelsey, your phone's cutting out just a little bit, but let me just ask you before I let you go then. Give me the most important change that Hobart and William Smith can make to satisfy students that potential victims are being protected.
I think that the school really needs with the students. I think that transparency is a huge issue and that we need to be able to have an open conversation about rape and sexual assault on college campuses, because it's a reality that a lot of students face. And the more that we can make it part of and a regular conversation that everyone can be engaged in, the easier it will be to combat it and to prevent it.
Kelsey, thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts. And let me open this up now and say that if anyone wants to join the conversation, whether you're a student or not, maybe you have no connection at all to Hobart and William Smith, this is a story that's bigger than Hobart and William Smith. And we'd love to hear from you. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Let's grab Bill from Victor. Bill, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a comment and an observation. It's clearly in this particular case that an assault did occur. There's no argument about that. Secondly, there is physical evidence of sexual contact based from the rape kit. And thirdly, it's obvious that the young lady was intoxicated. She had more than twice the legal limit. And the question I have is, why no prosecution when all the physical evidence is available? And my second question is this. Why are universities and colleges allowed to set up these panels? They have no legal standing whatsoever. And in so many cases, they totally mishandle the victim and the outcome. I'd be interested to hear any views or comments on that. And again, thank you for taking my call.
Bill, thank you for the call. Let me start with Mary Jo. When it comes to panels, the creation of these panels, Hobart and William Smith is not alone. Different campuses and different institutions will have their own policies and procedures, but they're not alone in this. We don't mean to single them out. And in fact, earlier this year, they were one of 55 institutions across the country that was cited for handling cases like this perhaps not as fully or appropriately as should be. And again, that's up for debate, and I would love to hear from Hobart and William Smith on that. But the panels. Bill's asking, how is that even legal? Why isn't this just a police matter? What do you say?
It's an interesting question because most college campuses do have some sort of judicial disciplinary panel that is in place to handle all sorts of issues that may come up around campus, not just sexual assault related. But when somebody does come forward with a sexual assault disclosure, legally they're offered two options generally on a campus: to report through the criminal process through law enforcement or to follow the campus procedures through the judiciary system. Now, how things might be offered as far as what the each route looks like is up to whomever that person has disclosed to, which is why it's incredibly important to have an advocate in place, because the advocate's well-versed on what all those options may look like and can really be with somebody from start to finish, regardless of what they decide. But ultimately, it's up to the survivor to decide which route they want to take.
And in this case, Anna ends up in front of a three-person panel at Hobart and William Smith. According to the New York Times article, she had an advocate in the room with her, but she was not even allowed to communicate verbally with that person. So I'm not sure what the point of that is. Everything got done in 12 days. Anna felt that she wasn't prepared to actually go over the statements that had been made to understand everything that was happening very quickly, that the panel members were asking questions that the New York Times implied were inappropriate, that at times panel members confused facts within the case, and that the panel, according to the New York Times article, again, looked rather inept. But Hobart and William Smith is saying, again, that the New York Times missed a lot of details and got the context wrong, and that the panel was doing its job and that they're proud of the panel's work. So it's hard, without hearing Hobart and William Smith respond directly to those line-by-line problems that the New York Times raised, to fully understand. But Sarah Feldman, Hobart and William Smith student, Bill is asking, how come a student like you can be on campus and you end up in a campus judiciary setting instead of just in front of police? Are students comfortable with those two choices, or do you think it should just be a police matter?
I think having the option is great. I think that the school does make sure that they present both options. There are pros and cons for each, especially in some cases that students hope. In the case of Anna, unfortunately, her name did come out. But in most cases, I would say, on the school, the student does remain anonymous, and that's a huge pull, especially for college students. If they want to remain on campus and kind of they don't want to be known as the victim, the school can offer that in, you know, and no contact orders, which we had also discussed in the petition. So in that sense, that is a big draw. because their names don't have to become public. And sometimes, as you saw in this case, right or wrong, the process is much shorter than going through a legal process. So for some people, those options are much more appealing. But the school does present all options.
At the very least, if those panels are going to be an option, they have to be run appropriately with trained panel members, and it has to be handled well. You know,
exactly. And that's one of the biggest, I mean, that's the first thing that we're asking for in the petition, is that these cases have to be handled with the utmost care and the utmost respect.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Coalition of Concerned Students petition includes the following points we haven't even read yet. Quote, in investigative proceedings, work with all parties involved to set a timeline that respects the privacy of all participants and the required period needed to process and analyze all supplementary medical examinations. Mary Jo Marino, that seems like it should be a basic standard, don't you think?
It should be, but it's not always. Sometimes things that come so simple aren't always that simple, I guess. So I think what's mainly important is just making sure that any agency, whether it be a school or otherwise, have policies and procedures in place that are communicated to students, parents, when coming into a school, so that everybody knows what the expectations are and everyone knows who they can go to and what they can do should they experience a trauma or should they know somebody that experienced such a trauma.
I want to read a comment from June, a registered nurse, who sent me this note this morning on this case. Dear Mr. Dawson, according to yesterday's New York Times article, the disciplinary committee had no responsibility to share and assess the results of Anna's medical examination and the laboratory analysis of the fluids involved. They concluded that the football players were innocent before the lab results were even final. The medical assessment and lab results are a higher standard of evidence than interviews of those under the influence of alcohols and drugs. The objective data removes the questions of he said, she said. If Anna had invasive testing and examination done, surely mouth swabs could have been taken from the three football players to establish their relationship to the fluids. And since they all denied sexual activity, their stories could have been confirmed or discredited then. Why were the cell phone pictures reportedly taken and shared not used for confirmation? Why were so many things not considered? Maybe these questions could be asked of Hobart and William Smith. June, I will tell you that Hobart and William Smith, again, is referring us to the statement they've released on their website. I would encourage you to read it. It is a long one. They consider a lot of these matters. Do they answer all of those questions? No. Do I have a lot of specific questions I'd like them to answer? Absolutely yes. And I think that they will. I mean, I think they're hearing from people around the country on this, and it's not an easy day for them. But the hope that Sarah Feldman has, and a lot of people have, is that this everyone comes out stronger from this, or that the policy improves, and that the way they handle these procedures improves. Let's grab a couple more other quick phone calls here while we have the time. This is Eric from Brighton. Eric, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I want to sort of offer a very pragmatic, incentive-based perspective on the topic. One of the themes that looms large in sexual assault on college campuses is athletes and the culture of entitlement. And universities make pragmatic decisions all the time that, for instance, like Florida State, that protecting its potential of winning a national championship is more important than looking into whether one of its star football players raped someone on campus and or off campus. The incentive system has to change. Athletes are very often involved in these things. There is a culture of entitlement. There's also millions of dollars at stake for colleges who thrive off the revenue generated by big-time sports. So that's one aspect of it. I would also say that, you know, there are books that students consult in deciding which colleges to go to, and they talk about which is the best party school, which is, you know, all kinds of different things. And they're written from the perspective of students. It's time that, and I'm not talking just about data generated by the Justice Department, it's time that the popularly based books like these include sections and discussions as to which campuses take these issues the most seriously. Responding effectively to this ought to be a badge of honor. Responding ineffectively ought to be a badge of shame. And colleges need to be held accountable. And finally, very quickly, it used to be that the juvenile justice system had no procedural safeguards. And anything could be done because, you know, it was informal, it was done for the best interest of the child. But then the courts realized that was denying juveniles, young people, their constitutional rights. It's time that there has to be more of an adversarial aspect to this, which is built in with procedural safeguards.
Eric, thanks for the call. What do you think, Mary Jo?
I think it's about time we get ahead of the eight ball and really start dealing with a topic that is not shed a light on until something like this comes up, something like Anna's story. And I think these are things that go on every day. You know, every year Restore talks with about 15 to 2,000 callers that have experienced a sexual assault. And so that education and intervention information is hugely important so that people can get their needs met and get the services that they need. This is also a topic that people feel like, well, it can't happen to me. We need to get past that and look a little deeper. This can happen to anybody. It could happen to you. It could happen to me. It could happen to our loved ones. And so we need to know what to do when this happens, and we need to take a greater stand of bystander intervention so that if something's going on that doesn't look quite right, people will step up and say something and feel like they'll be supported by their community by that.
Sarah Feldman, again, if you're just joining us, Sarah's on the line with us. She is going to be a senior at Hobart and William Smith Colleges next year, and she's representing the Coalition of Concerned Students. We've heard from listeners online communicating with us on social media who are raising the question of just how prevalent sexual assault really is. And without getting too specific, I know personally you've heard that you know stories on campus that have happened.
Mm-hmm. I do, and it's unfortunate that, you know, some people very close to me have been victim to this. And I hate to say it, but HWS is not unique in this. And that they're happening everywhere. And I think that not only it's, you know, right now it's, of course, especially with Anna's case, it's very easy to point the finger and blame, you know, policy issues, but it has to start at the culture of, you know, this, making catcalls at students as they walk by and, you know, saying, oh, it's okay because the student is drunk. Things like that, that's a cultural thing that has to change within not just college students, but everywhere. And I think that I hope is part of the conversation that comes from this, is how can we change the dialogue? Because if we're just sitting there pointing fingers, absolutely nothing is going to get done.
If you want to join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. The number's toll-free. Tom from Rochester. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi. What everybody's focusing on the college itself, and I am saying, why isn't the DA processing this case? That would give Hobart a black eye move to force them into changing policy. Let the DA... If these guys are guilty as charged, or but they haven't been charged, let the DA handle it. Bloody those guys, bloody Hobart College, and the rules will change. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Tom, and I can tell you that DA Mike Tantillo in this case was not critical of Hobart and William Smith, and said that you know, procedures were followed, and that. He is quoted in the New York Times story. So, you know, I don't want to confuse anyone to think that law enforcement may go after Hobart and William Smith. I think that there is some agreement that this case, Anna's case, from the Hobart and William Smith side and from at least from the legal community side that I've read, was handled appropriately. That may fly in the face of some of the evidence that the New York Times reporter presented. But that's part of the conversation now, which is not necessarily just Anna's case, but why are the cases handled this way? So let's take the shortest break in radio. We're going to come right back, and we're going to get more of your comments and questions and touch on some more of the points that the Coalition of Concerned Students would like to see Hobart and William Smith adopt going forward as they try to improve their policies. You're listening to member-supported public radio.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Freed Maxick CPAs, an audit, tax, and consulting firm working to meet the dynamic needs of local businesses. Services available in Rochester, freedmaxick.com.
The air pollution in China is bad, really bad, but we haven't always been a breath of fresh air ourselves, you know.
It was just a toxic atmosphere. I was thinking, what could you compare it to today? And I think you'd have to look at cities like Beijing. It hurt, literally hurt, to breathe.
I'm Kai Rizdal, a new series, We Used to Be China. First stop, Los Angeles. Next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
That's tonight at 6:30 p.m. right here on WXXI and WEOS.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Sarah Feldman is on the line with us. She's a senior at Hobart and William Smith Colleges and a member of the Coalition of Concerned Students. Sarah, by the way, where can people find the petition that you guys have created? Are you there, Sarah? I lost Sarah for a second.
Here.
Oh, there. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sarah. Where can people find the petition?
The petition is located on change.org, and if you search HWS colleges, it should appear. At this point now, we have, about 1,500 signatures so far.
And also in studio with us is Mary Jo Marino, and Mary Jo Marino is here from the Restore Program. She's the Restore Program Manager at Planned Parenthood in Rochester. Tom on Twitter writes that colleges and universities for years have evaded the criminal justice system as a method of image protection. If the students were not students but were people of color, they would be in prison. That's strong comments. But Sarah, as a student there, do you get the sense that your school is more interested in image protection than criminal justice?
I don't have that sense. I think, that's probably the answer that the press wants to hear. But in all honesty, I think that working directly with the administration, I think that they are unbelievable people and they are working extremely hard to make sure that, changes are being made. I think that it's important that they continue to work with the students. I think that definitely wasn't happening before, but through all of this, let's open their eyes. And I think as long as they continue to do that, then we're in good shape. Nothing is going to get accomplished.
Absolutely. And for our listeners, that's one of the reasons that we reached out to Anna's attorney, Inga Parsons, who I spoke with last night. Anna feels that she said all she needs to say to the New York Times. But Inga told me that she wanted the Coalition of Concerned Students to join the conversation. And part of the reason I wanted someone like Sarah Feldman on the program is because this isn't about an extreme view or trying to hurt a college. This is about trying to be constructive and productive going forward. And I think that's what you're hearing from the students we've heard this hour. And let's get back to the phones and take a few more calls here. This is George from Brighton. George, thanks for calling the show. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is George. I'm a physician in Rochester. And just the fact that this committee came out with a decision before they even had to test the fluids. I mean, if this ever happened in an emergency room, this is malpractice. And this should be adjudicated. I mean, there should be a lawsuit and a law. And William Smith shouldn't be allowed to hide behind a statement and secrecy. I mean, they obviously handle this totally incorrectly from a medical and from a moral standpoint. And I feel that a large penalty or settlement, as Duke paid $20 million to the students and parents of the boys wrongly accused. And I think William Smith had to pay out $20 million. It would be a message to William Smith they wouldn't forget, and it would be also a message to other colleges. They saw money like this changing hands because of absolutely sloppy work on the part of the college.
George, thank you for the call. Your comments are the kinds of comments that certainly the colleges are hearing today. But I want to go back to their statement. Again, Hobart and William Smith Colleges was invited to join us on this program today. They declined. They referred us to their online statement. And here is a portion of that. The colleges have serious concerns regarding the reporter's acquisition of the transcripts of the hearings, sections of which were quoted out of context in the article. The colleges did not share these transcripts with the reporter because to do so would violate the law. The colleges do not provide preferential treatment to athletes. We hold all of our students, including athletes, to the highest standards. We have never, nor would we ever, allow students who have violated our sexual misconduct code to remain on campus to play a sport. And then they go down their list of the points that they say the New York Times left out were downplayed in the story. But I will say this. If the New York Times mishandled this and reported it out of context, we still don't have a good answer from Hobart and William Smith about why, apparently, only one of the three panel members was able to consider some of the physical evidence, that some of the physical evidence might not have been fully processed or considered, that the lies to police from the two males involved were not considered by the panel. Those were some of the questions that, context or not, I think people deserve answers on those. I think they'll probably get them eventually. But at the same time, the colleges are saying that the New York Times got it wrong in a lot of ways, that the reporting was sloppy. So there's still a lot that we don't know, I think, unfortunately, in this case. This is Peter from Rochester. Peter, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you, Evan. I just wanted to comment. A lot of people are being critical of the panel that Hobart and William Smith held, but what a lot of people don't realize is that the colleges were required to have such a panel. Title IX regulations for any school that receives federal education aid, including private schools like Hobart and William Smith, are required to have these panels in place in lieu of the criminal justice system. And it puts a framework in place where the director of the bookstore is adjudicating these kind of issues without clear due process and certain restraints involved that you'd see in a criminal justice system. So I think we need to take some top-level looks here at federal regulations under Title IX to see how we can change this so private colleges and universities aren't handling internally these rapes, which are felonies.
A very important point here, Peter. And Sarah, I'd love to hear your take on what Peter is saying.
I agree completely. I mean, there's not much more I can add in that sense. I think I think the school has been doing what they have had to do. I think that this is the time for us to be an example and, make our policies even better. I think that that it's clear to everyone. And I think, based on kind of the school's response to the petition, is that it's very clear that change, especially in regards to these panels, needs to be made.
And to Peter's point, Mary Jo, Hobart and William Smith might very well say, you may not like the system, but we're operating under the law as it's written, right?
Right. And I think, too, it goes back to just making sure that students are aware of fully in detail what their options are so that they can make a decision that they feel best about. And also having the advocate available to intervene if it looks like someone needs to take a break or if someone is confused, and to just really make sure that they're understanding all the options that are in place.
Yes.
We are also kind of what we hope to have is that all of the, in terms of one of the position points, where all of the resources are readily available and that you should be able to access these resources and understand what the policies are, even if you're not in the situation where you have to file a complaint or file, a sexual assault report. We want these to be available and completely transparent so that everyone knows what they, what their options are before they get into the situation.
And you can see, again, all of the requested changes from the Coalition of Concerned Students on that petition that we've linked to on our Twitter account and also on WXXINews.org. You can find it on change.org by searching for HWS. Let's get back to the phones. This is Betty from Rochester. Betty, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm the mother of a teenage girl who will be going to college very soon. And we talk about rape very regularly, probably at least once a month. And what I was kind of hoping to do was put the word out that fathers and mothers need to be doing the same thing with their young men. They need to be talking about rape regularly. They need to make sure that their sons know what consent is, and they need to make sure that their kids know rape is not okay with them. Because I think sometimes we get caught up in a culture that says, especially young men, are entitled to what they want sexually. So I was just hoping maybe the panelists could talk about what we can do to better educate our young boys on this.
Betty, I think it's a great question. Let me start with Mary Jo. Go ahead.
Betty, first, I just want to commend you for having that conversation with your child, because I think that's already a really great first step in the right direction. I think it's important that at a young age we start talking about what's an okay touch, what's a not okay touch. If you feel uncomfortable, who are some people you can talk to about it? This is a topic that we can, in a conversation that we can start very young, and increase the knowledge and increase the detail of the topic of sexual assault as people get older, is, of course, to make it more age appropriate. I think, too, we also need to know that this isn't just a women's issue, which a lot of times it's been phrased in that way. This is a people issue. This is a human issue, and it's not okay. And so I think when we step up as a community, whether it's happened to us or not, and say this isn't okay and it's not going to be tolerated, I think that's when some change might start to happen. I also think it's important, too, to just have that education, to contact a program like Restore if you need help with that. With that conversation, we offer services 24 hours. We do one-on-one counseling. And so to take advantage of what's available to really have an in-depth conversation to answer what specialized questions somebody may have so that we can really work on this together. You know, this is a community issue, and we really all need to team together to combat it.
How do they find you at Restore?
You can reach us on our 24-hour hotline. The number is area code 585-546-2777.
Betty, I thank you for the call. And Sarah Feldman, what do you think about her comments there?
I think it's brilliant. I think another important piece is to reduce the stigma in that people shouldn't feel ashamed to report an issue, and they shouldn't feel like they're going to get bullied or criticized as a result. I think it takes a lot of courage to report an issue, and I think people should be praised for that.
We're talking about the story that was on the front page of the New York Times yesterday about a Hobart and William Smith student named Anna who said that she reported a rape and regretted doing so. And a lot of the focus has been on the process this hour when it comes to the panel. See another comment from Mark online says that the panel should be dropped entirely, leave it to police. So we're seeing a lot of that. And let's grab Chad from Henrietta, who I hear is a lawyer. Is that right, Chad?
That's correct. And I think that they failed in the article, at least, to focus on the key issue, which was alcohol and consent. I mean, we've made it very clear that for people under an age, they don't have the power to consent to sexual relationships. And we need to make it clear to the world at large in our communities that someone who's been drinking has no ability to consent. And that's that connection with alcohol and youth and colleges that I think people are just kind of stepping around. And it's the use of alcohol and the effect that it has upon their consensual behavior.
Chad, let me ask you, if you've got two students who are, say, 19 years old and they are legally drunk, is the advice to avoid sexual contact entirely? Because
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No question about it, because they are not in a position to make rational decisions. If they've got a point 1.2 or even a point 0.08, they are not capable of making good decisions.
Mary Jo, what do you think?
I agree. I think alcohol is the number one date rape drug. And so I think it's also important to note that the age of consent in New York State is 17. Oftentimes people think it's 18, but that's not the case. The age of consent is 17. And there can be college-age students that are 17 that just by age alone are not able to consent. And then when we add alcohol to it, that just compounds it.
Sarah, go ahead, Chad.
I was just going to say, in my view, even if they're 21 and 24, if one of the partners has been drinking, then when the consent is just not possible to grant.
Absolutely.
That's my opinion, and I realize it's kind of a hard line, but I've just seen too much of it in the 40-plus years that I've been practicing law.
Chad, thanks very much. Sarah, is that kind of stance too difficult for college students to get their heads around, or do you think that is a good place to have a conversation?
I think it's a perfect thought in in an ideal world that would be exactly the case, but I think unfortunately in the midst of fraternity parties and college parties where you might be too nervous, unfortunately, to talk to somebody unless you have a beer, I agree in a perfect situation that, you know, the consent piece and the alcohol piece wouldn't be connected. But unfortunately, I don't think that's the change that we're going to see anytime soon.
We got a few more minutes left, and we're talking about what we can learn going forward from that story in the New York Times. And part of the petition from the Coalition of Concerned Students asked to restructure the mandated rape prevention and student life seminars to focus on bystander intervention. Despite, and this is a quote, despite the administration's insistence on its efficacy, the current seminar model is not taken seriously. We need a structure that legitimately helps to actualize change in student behavior. Sarah, thoughts on that?
I think that's really important. I think I had mentioned before the culture piece, and that we, from the get-go, as soon as students walk on campus, they need to know the kind of structure and the kind of environment they are going to be in college, not just HWS, but anywhere. And I think it's really important to start those open conversations early and to provide resources right away, especially for first years who are so new to everything that they don't know where they can turn. And I think those resources need to be readily available, and bystanders need to know what they can do.
Mary Jo, as we look across the country, you know schools across the country are watching this story at Hobart William Smith, and they are nervous. They want to make sure they're doing the right thing. Hobart wants to make sure they're doing the right thing. What do you think the reaction can be going forward to make this productive?
I think it's important to put a voice to this and to really say, what can we learn from Anna's story and what could we do moving forward? And really have that conversation that may be difficult, may be uncomfortable, but really figure out what can we do moving forward and what can we make available to students and to everybody in the community. Anna's story happened to take place on a college campus. There are stories similar to that that have happened outside of a college campus. So really the issue is much bigger, and really it starts with having that conversation.
And Sarah, let me wrap with this. We've got about 30 seconds. Has the administration responded to your petition in any way yet, and what do you expect going forward?
As of about the start of the interview, they have responded, and they have said that they, you know, appreciate and respect our claims, and we, I think, are starting to meet with the administration later today, early tomorrow.
All right. So it sounds like there is some movement there. Sarah, thank you for taking the time to share the student perspective on this. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mary Jo Marino from the Restore Program at Planned Parenthood, thank you for your perspective as well.
Thank you so much.
And once again, our invitation to Hobart William Smith to come on at any point and talk about this. It hasn't been an easy 24 hours, but looking forward now, it looks like there is a roadmap to improving all of these systems. I think that's what everybody wants. So we would certainly appreciate taking the conversation a little further in the future. Thanks to you for listening, and thanks to Mike Black, our engineer behind the glass today. I'm Evan Dawson. You've been listening to Member Supported Public Radio.